You know, I don't care for sex. I find it an embarrassing and dull exercise. That's why I prefer sports, because you can win. That's a Norm Macdonald joke. So following it up, on sad trend at the moment of starting this podcast off with jokes from comedians who've passed away. But yeah, I went down a rabbit hole yesterday of just watching Norm Macdonald clips. It's actually quite hard to tell jokes at the start of the podcast because they're either too long or they're not really appropriate for a Formula One podcast. But that one, I feel like that was quite funny. Reaction wasn't what I thought it was going to be.
It did beat your Hitler attempt with the first joke. So, yeah.
Outtake.
For that, you can have, you get an extra point for reading the room, Nate.
Yeah.
And for being prepared. I like being prepared, you know, a plan B.
Yeah. But the listeners aren't going to hear my Hitler joke, are they? We're cutting that one out.
We'll see.
So, Nate, to put you out of your misery,
yeah,
you're going to get a 6.
Oh, okay. I feel like there's some stability now with these rankings.
Yeah. Okay. Good. Thanks. I appreciate. No. That.
I mean, you know, because you know, I was just nailing the nines out of the park all the time. I'll come back to 6. You know, I've had a few 6s.
Yeah, but I think that it just inspires you, hopefully, to push the joke envelope a little bit further.
Yeah, although in honor of Norm, I do want like a 1 out of 10 next week, just to tell a really good bad joke. So I might do that.
If it's a good bad joke, I'm normally going to laugh at that and it's going to get you points.
Yeah, true. So. That's true. I'll take a 6. I mean, one of the problems with telling any comedian's joke is that you're not that comedian. So you ultimately are always going to butcher it. So, yeah, no, I think that's fair. Good start.
Welcome to The Paddock, a podcast featuring stories following Formula One around the world. I'm Lawrence Bretto, senior writer at F1.com.
And I'm Chris Medland, F1 correspondent at Racer.
And I'm Nate Saunders from ESPN.
It's been a strong start.
Hey, guys.
Hey, chaps.
So we can edit out the bad stuff so everyone does think it's a good start, right? We haven't done anything wrong.
Yeah, that might be the first mention to them that it's gone wrong at any stage. But yeah. It did slightly. It's fine. How are we all?
Very good, thanks. I feel like I've seen you boys quite a lot recently, both in the flesh and digitally.
And which one is better? Do you prefer? Yeah.
Oh, definitely in the flesh, guys. Yeah. I feel like you try harder in the flesh. When we're just chatting in the Zoom, you don't care so much.
Yeah, I definitely. I mean, I'm completely naked from like the waist down. So I'm not really. I am actually wearing trousers just for... Nice black pair Adidas tracksuit, which looks rather fetching
to go with your Adidas t-shirt.
So I am actually sat head to toe in Adidas gear. Yeah. So Adidas, send us free stuff, please.
It's a lovely plug.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, this is the part of the show, Medders, where I like to hear if we've got any reviews. Do we have any reviews?
Oh yeah, I think people felt really sorry for us that the last episode it did really well, actually. Thank you, everyone. But also, we were terrible, weren't we? So I think people felt sorry for us that we weren't going to get any good reviews. So they sent some in, which was really
so we
nice.
Basically blackmailed people into sending reviews in.
Yeah.
So if we're terrible, we get good reviews. Oh, I like it.
And this is a completely like global set of reviews because we have 3 this week. And it's one from Australia, one from the UK, and one from the US. So
amazing.
I think we cover the globe, basically. They're the 3 countries that exist, aren't there? Is there more? I never remember. So the first one comes from GG Fromouse, which is probably not how you say their username, but this is always a fun try, from Australia.
It'll be GG Fromouse instead of GG Fromouse.
Better. I should have sent this to you, Nate, to do, actually, because you could have done it in the accent.
No, I don't want to insult someone with my terrible Australian accent.
I mean, you know you always insult people with your terrible accents on the regular.
Yeah, true. But I just don't want to on this podcast.
Okay, fair.
Today. On this episode.
Right now.
Yeah, right this second.
So this one says, great listen. Love the Paddock. Always so relaxed. Refreshing to listen to a podcast where the presenters are all so happy to be there and are so involved in the sport. usually well executed. Fair point after the last episode. But looking forward to hearing Lawrence improving on his introductioning in the future. Cheers from Australia. Yeah, I'm a big fan of both.
A call out from down under.
Yeah, and the use of the word introductioning rather than introducing or introductions, which I'm guessing is an Aussie word, but I like it.
Well, I welcome constructive feedback, so thank you.
And Gigi from AOS does say that they are looking forward to hearing you improve. So it's progress. What, Nate? You did it.
I did. I just like that you casually dropped it in there. Fantastic. It's just it's like it's infectious. You know, I did it once, and then I'd like to think that was involuntary, that you didn't even realize you were doing it.
I wish, but it took a lot of effort.
Yeah.
Second one is from the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland. And it's from Alex Bryan, who gives it the title, It's All Right. Bad jokes, average F1 chat, hosts are so-so. Top three F1 podcasts for me, 5 stars. So big fan of that, Alex. You had us in the first half. But yeah.
I like that as well, because he's kind of inadvertently insulting every F1 podcast out there, because he's saying that we're like bang average, but we're also top three.
That's
so it means like the field must just be bang average as well. At least like bang average at best, which wouldn't make it average, would it? Maths. Anyway. That's why I do written stuff with words.
I knew there was a reason why we had you on this podcast, mate.
Really? I'm still trying to work it out. I can't remember.
Okay, so that's an average review. What's the third one?
Well, it's an average review that was 5 stars. We like that.
I like that. That was very British, wasn't it? It was like 5 stars. Yeah, it's all right.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But it was like
impolite to say anything else.
Whereas the Aussie was like, oh, I love this show. Like, it's great. It's laid back. It's chilled. Love it. And then the British guy is just like, yeah, I suppose it's fine. That's fine. This American one, I'm trying to work out what it'll be like, but it'll be optimistic and glowing. Let's hear it.
Okay, it's from Steve T, somewhere in the US. And the title is Totally Entertaining. Also 5 stars. Thank you, Steve T. And says, I don't usually rate things at the highest level because I think you need to do something well above average to earn it. The average is back. The Paddock is a very interesting look behind the scenes of F1 journalism, and the opening joke, 60-second review, and possibility of bribing me with some swag pushes it over the top. Yes, Steve T.
Love that.
Love
there you
that.
Go. So an American who understands how averages work. Australians and British didn't get it. We're too mixed up with our imperial and metric, you know, that whole thing.
Well, there's that, and an American who knows that, you know, you can bribe us, basically.
Free stuff.
And we bribe them. It's kind of a two-way street. So I feel like that means it's not immoral.
Yeah. Also, if Linny's listening to this, we haven't got around to sending the swag over to you yet, as far as I'm aware. No, but it is on the way.
Yeah,
it's next to Medland.
Yeah, the box is down here, and it's a big box, and it was very expensive to send on the first thing I looked at. So I'm having to measure it up and check some other outlets for delivery to the US. But it's coming somehow, some way. I'll probably just smuggle it in when it's Austin Grand Prix week. That's what I'll do.
yeah, just giant bag.
For US border control, by the way. That was a joke. Please don't break my back.
Yeah, I gave you all that other stuff to smuggle in medals. Remember the...
Yeah, we'll talk about that later.
Don't worry about it. Codenamed.
Don't worry. I can cut that out like your Hitler joke. Don't worry.
What
Barreto,
joke is
say
that?
Something.
Talking of things that we don't cut out, how do you guys want to spend the next 60 seconds of your lives? Do you want to listen to a little review that I did?
What I would love, Nate, is to remember the weekend that we've just seen in 60 seconds.
So this one is the first one that features me speaking a foreign language for more than just saying I do speak it in the review, but I intro it in Italian.
I didn't even know that you could do this, Nate.
I am a man of many talents. Well, I'm a man of about 7 talents. And that's one of them.
We'll be the judges of that.
Ok, questa è la recensione del Gran Premio d'Italia. See what I did there, everyone? Because it's a review about Italy. Anyway, first position, Danny Ricciardo. Danny Rick's back, everyone. But he never left. Molto bene. Lando Norris in P2. That's my favourite 1-2 of all time. Don't at me. Valtteri Bottas in third. Bottas 10.0. I think we found him, everyone. The best Bottas of all time. Charles Leclerc so close to a Ferrari podium, Perez penalised. Sainz and Stroll were 6th and 7th. Alonso, bit feisty, wasn't he? George Russell, in 9th? What are Mercedes playing at, LOL? A solid point for Ocon. Everyone's favourite Canadian, Nicholas Latifi, in 11th. Sebastian Vettel, climate change. Antonio Giovinazzi, he's Italian, so is Monza. Bobby Kubica, that was fun. Good job, Bobby. Mick Schumacher got spun around by Nikita Mazepin, who didn't finish, and I didn't even notice, really. Max Verstappen, guilty. Lewis Hamilton, probably also guilty. We love Gasly. Monza did love Gasly, didn't this time. And Dr. Yuki Tsunoda Esquire didn't even start the race. So, bad luck, Yuki.
Well, that is strong, but there's a but. Because I know that there's an outtake, which we've never had before, because Nate is a one-hit wonder.
Yeah, this is the first proper time that I've messed up like this. Usually I'll just like, oh, I'll start again. But this one, I was full flow, and I sent it to Medes earlier. Well, I sent it to both of you earlier, actually.
Alonso, bit feisty. George Norris. George Norris, fuck. Yeah.
George Norris.
And also, if you hear, my audio was messed up, so I had to fix my mic. So I'm glad that outtake happened. It was ordained. It was fate.
We're also glad. But yeah, I enjoyed that. I think that's a
bold
shout for favourite one-two of all time.
To listeners young and old, that's the first time I've ever sworn. Okay? But don't swear. I don't use colourful language. I was just caught up in the heat of the moment. But yeah, George Norris, what a driver that would be if you merge George Russell and Lando Norris together.
Yeah, definitely.
They might as well all go home. I thought it was, you know, for a review that started in Italian.
I loved the Italian aspect of it, Nate. Yeah. So thank you to whoever your tutor is for
it's a lady called Elena. I haven't had a lesson for a while, actually. I need to get one back, because it did take me a while to work out exactly what I was going to say, and it wasn't exactly the longest sentence in the world. So there you go.
This is just an insight, Nate, into how much prep you put in to do this podcast. You know, honestly, many might think we just turned up and have a chat.
Honestly, I did upwards of 10 minutes prep for that, and that's 10 minutes more than I usually do. So, I mean, I feel like, if nothing else, it shows how much this pod is growing.
What I like is that it's, we can spin this, that it's some amazing insight into the effort that Nate goes to for his job. And he's like, I need to learn Italian because of Ferrari and Giovinazzi and Monza and Imola and Mugello. We've had 5 races in Italy in the last year.
And I couldn't go to any of them.
Yeah. And also, how many times have you actually spoken Italian to do with F1?
None. Okay. I was trying to think of how to say that in Italian. I just thought my brain isn't switched on. I've only had one coffee this morning. Okay. I need a cappuccino to speak Italian. Un espresso.
I think I found out, this is more great insight for the listeners. I think I found out this weekend, or noticed, that in Italy, if you order one, then when they give you it, they'll call it a cappuccio.
Cappuccio?
Yeah. I want to say it's cappuccio or cappuccia. I'm probably saying something really offensive, aren't I?
I think that that's a new thing. They've just been listening to Bob Mortimer a lot, you know, in his cappuccio. So they've now just said, we might as well call it that. It's changed the way Italy views their most famous hot drink. Anyway, we're talking nonsense about Italy. What wasn't nonsense was the Grand Prix, the Gran Premio at the weekend. I thought, personally, that was like beyond my wildest expectations in terms of result. I thought before the race, I was like, hey, if McLaren can win this, that'd be amazing. But something big needs to go down. But McLaren could have won it without everything happening. Mm-hmm.
I think they would have won it without Max and Lewis having their moment. I think we went into that weekend thinking it wasn't going to be that great given what happened in the sprint. But Monza's delivered for the second successive year. I thought Danny Rick was on one this weekend.
I thought he... So on Saturday when he was being interviewed on... Obviously, you guys were there. I was watching it back home. But he had this like kind of calm confidence that we haven't seen him have for quite... Well, since he was at Renault, you know, and he would be like, oh, I think tomorrow... We'll see what happens tomorrow, you know. Keep an eye on us type thing. Whereas usually he'd downplay expectations. But I feel like he knew, like, if I can beat Max into turn one, I'm winning the race. Which, yeah. You know, and when you give Danny Rick that shot, that's always been a story of his career. Like, you give him that sniff. Even if it's just like there's a 10% chance you can win tomorrow. He's like, no, that's 100%. I'm taking it. Which I think is one of the things that stands him out. So I thought it was fantastic. And for him, it was great. Just he needed it, didn't he?
And for more insight like that, I believe, Nate, you've written a book about Danny Rick, haven't you?
So, I have.
And it's still available in all good bookstores.
So he's broken the curse of the book because he hadn't won since the publication of that book. He hadn't done it. So he's broken the curse.
But I do have a bone to pick with the book because I looked at it on Sunday night thinking, oh, this is good. There's a book on Danny Rick. And it had no mention of his win at Monza for McLaren. So, yeah. What is this?
Yeah, well, I was too busy. I mean, there's a lot of mentions of how he could have probably won Monza for Red Bull over and over again, many, many times. But yeah, it was an oversight from me, I have to say. So my bad. My bad, guys.
Sort it out.
But it just means, Nate, that you just bring out version 2, right?
Right,
you
know, exactly.
The refreshed version, the McLaren years.
We can call, and I was thinking about this, you know, it's called Pursuit of Greatness. You could call it Pursuit, but put a 2 in there, in the Pursuit, so it's like Pursuit of Greatness.
But if you say Pursuit...
Yeah, but you don't say it. I mean, I said it sounds bad, explain it. But you put it in there. And then, okay, you need that book, and then when you release the third one, you spell one of the E's with a 3, which is his number.
Ah, nice.
Pursuit of Greatness 3.
But then it'd be 23.
Huh?
Or do you take the 2 out?
No, that's in book 3. Book 3 is Pursuit of Greatness.
Come on, Medders.
But 2 is Pursuit of Greatness.
Yeah, but if it's Pursuit of Greatness and then you change an E for 3, is it not then for 23 of Greatness?
No, because you the 3 is in the Greatness. The 3 is in the Greatness of book 3. We're complicating what is clearly a very simple formula for this book, for this trilogy that I want to release. It's Pursuit of Greatness.
Yeah.
And then you drop the 2.
That's what I needed to know. See, I thought you were leaving the 2 in there. Like,
for the third book, you drop the 2, start fresh, but you put 3 in the Greatness. So it becomes Danny Ricciardo, Pursuit of Greatness, and you drop the 2. Just hope there's not need for a fourth one. I don't know where a 4 would go in there. That would complicate things. We'd get into Star Wars territory then, wouldn't we? Where it's like, do we need to make this one?
Well, let's just worry about the second and the third first, mate.
Yeah. Okay. Well, guys, maybe we can get a crowdfunding going for Pursuit of Greatness. Anything upwards of 2 pence that you want, or 2 pennies of your local currency, and we can get this up and running. We'll see. We'll see if there's any interest in that. Probably not.
The fourth one, the A of Greatness, could be a 4.
Oh, yeah. So how would you say that?
I'm not even going to try it.
Griffortness? Pursuit of Griffortness. There you go. This is fantastic.
Yeah, he's pursuing for a while then, it sounds like.
Yeah, maybe. This is the thing. I don't think we'll get to 4. I think 3 is probably a stretch, as it is. Griffortness is probably where we want to finish it.
Well, that's good.
yeah. So anyway, I think that we have basically ruined any chance of me having any future book sales with that last 2 minutes. So that's good. Anyway, so Danny Ricciardo, Pursuit of Greatness is available on Amazon. But do bear in mind that it's completely irrelevant as of about March 2018. But what backstory, what depth of character that there is within it. So actually, it is minus his last 3 wins, you know, because it missed the 2 in 2018. And then it's missed this one.
Not picking holes in this person.
So, Danny Ricciardo, the 5-time Grand Prix winner, you can read all about him in my book that came out after 2 of those wins that it doesn't mention. So, this is why I was never going to be a salesman.
But to be fair, for the sort of new fan base that might have come into Formula One, who maybe got into it through like Drive to Survive and stuff, and haven't really followed that long before, they need that gap filling in. Of what did Daniel Ricciardo do before the explosive departure from Red Bull? And you can fill in that gap.
It was like the pre-Netflix days, isn't it? That's what I'll do. I'll be like, if you want to know more about Danny Rick pre-Netflix, here's your book.
There you go. Slightly better.
I want to know more about Danny Rick post-Monza.
Yes.
But not like the whole of Monza, just post the race win when he walked into the TV pen and Barreto stood there with only one shoe on. Why?
Well, you might think that I wanted to keep him company because he obviously had no shoes on. But I also thought that it was only fair that, you know, having done so much talking around the TV pen and I was the last one that he came to, he's probably thirsty, right? So I thought, well, I've got a drink in a bottle, but who wants a drink out of a bottle when you can drink out of my shoe?
What was that? So, was it water or?
No, it was a beer.
Oh, okay.
It was a Heineken.
You were drinking on the job?
You just stood there doing the interviews after the race with a beer. That's outrageous.
I mean, it's the only way to get through. No.
Well, you better hope Stefano Domenicali doesn't listen to this podcast, because, well, you can say, you can rest easy that he doesn't. But that's
for
crazy.
For absolute clarity, I was not drinking on the job. Why do I always have to say that a lot on this podcast?
So that's what someone who was drinking on the job would say. Just to point that out. I'm not pointing any fingers here, Lawrence, but your story is paper thin. Anyway, sorry.
So I'll take you back to I think it was the Eiffel Grand Prix when Daniel was on the podium but didn't do a shoey. Do you remember that?
He forgot, and you reminded him.
And I reminded him in the TV pen. So I thought this time, seeing as I could see evidently that he had done a shoey, because I was interviewing when he was on the podium, so didn't know. I could see, because he had no shoes on, that he had done one. But I thought, well, why not do another one? So I took one of my shoes off, one of my favourites, actually. It was one of my Vans, red, yellow, green and blue, I think. So favourite, I can't remember the colours.
Yeah, exactly.
And I offered him a shoey, and he asked, was I going to do one? And I was like, well, in non-COVID times, I would have obviously shared a shoey, but it would not be cool, probably, to be sharing a shoey.
So just to clarify, but in COVID times, you were still happy him drinking out of your actual boot. That was still fine. I love that. You're like, no, look, COVID, mate, but please do drink out of my shoe. That's fine. Your argument is thinner than paper.
Oh, it's weak, isn't it?
It's pretty weak, yeah. It's pretty weak. Anyway, so, it's a good story, though. Carry on.
Poured the beer into the shoe, and he only went and did it, didn't he? Fair play to him. And he called it a foamer, because I didn't pour it very well, so the shoe kind of... Well, you know, obviously, when you don't pour beer properly, it just foams up. And he necked it, foam everywhere. Their footage, hopefully, will see the light of day shortly. I'm not sure when. I'm not sure where. I'm not sure how. But it will do.
On F1's official channels?
Not sure.
That's awesome.
So, fair play to him. I know that he'd done a show already, but I wanted to see if he'd do another one. And he did.
I got the feeling that was his most, like, to him, that was a pretty special win. Like, I don't know what you got from him post-race, Laz, but it felt like he looked quite speechless and quite, like, not emotional, but kind of trying to process it on Sunday night, which you don't usually see with him.
So I think the whole weekend was quite an important one for him overall, like mentally. He was pretty wound up with himself on Friday after qualifying, because I think he'd given himself like a kick up the ass heading into the weekend after the summer break. And, you know, the last couple haven't gone too well, but he knew that this one was a weekend where he could kind of make a breakthrough. And then he'd gone and missed out on P3 by, I can't remember what it was, a few hundredths. And I think he was pretty angry, but I think if anything, that probably fired him up for the rest of the weekend. Mm-hmm. And I think that roller coaster of emotion that he had and how important it was, because I think that up until the summer, I think he'd dealt with the pressure pretty well. But I think we were approaching a moment where he had to do something, mostly personally for himself. So I think that's why, I know it was his eighth win, he's won before, and some people might say, well, why is he getting so excited? But I think this was arguably the most significant win of his career, really.
Yeah, agreed.
It's certainly, like, I mean, it was the first one with a team that wasn't Red Bull as well. So if any part of him was doubting the move or whatever, maybe even on top of just his own form, it was maybe a little bit of confirmation that McLaren's a team going in the right direction. And, you know, because as you guys mentioned, this was a win that was fully earned. Like, he was winning that race.
Yeah.
Even if Max had a clean stop, like, McLaren had done the quickest stop of the weekend with Daniel. So Max wasn't...
They managed it really well up until even without Max. Like, the McLaren strategy was really on point. I thought it was fantastic.
Yeah, because you could see when Max then got kind of released when Daniel pit, and he'd already made a mistake, which is why McLaren took advantage. You're like, right, now we can get a pit stop in and the pressure's on Red Bull again. And Max was told, right, give it everything. And I was watching his mini sectors, and not a single one was an improvement on something he'd done before. So he was going slower. So you knew that he just had no tyres left and that McLaren had basically got them covered. And then obviously they had their drama, and then their Lewis incident, which no one cares about. And then with Lando as well, because of the pit stops, he was ahead of them. And if what Daniel had done was a sign of anything, that was a 1-2, like, done and dusted. And at the very least, I think having Lando there meant Daniel was very safe. So, yeah, I kind of feel like it's easy to overlook just how significant a win that was for McLaren as well, in terms of executing perfectly with the chance to win the race. and having a competitive car all weekend. I know they won't have it at many other tracks, but to take full advantage the way they did was like really, really impressive.
It's crazy as well that like the people we know at McLaren, none of them, if they've been, there's a few people who've been, I know at McLaren who've been there the entire time I've worked in F1, they've never won a race. Mm-hmm. So like you could see for the team what it meant. And some of them were like tweeting on Monday, were tweeting today even like, I can't believe that happened. Like it's crazy, which is very cool.
I saw a bunch of them on the flight back. They were unfortunately stuck on a plane with some of us from Milan, and they got on and I was like, oh, they're in such good moods. Obviously, this is, you know, great for them. Didn't get to chat to them at that point, spoke to them getting off the plane, and they weren't in such great moods anymore. And it was because the flight had left at 20 past seven. They'd not been to bed. Their alarms had gone off at four when they were sitting in the hotel bar celebrating and been like, we need to get sorted. Obviously, they had like, you know, a shuttle or whatever, but they were still on a high before getting on the plane. But then when they sat down and slept a little bit and then woke up at the other side when they'd landed in the UK at 8:30 in the morning, they were struggling.
That sounds like a brutal hangover.
Amazing, yeah. Though.
It was great to see and generally to talk to them about it. And like I think they still couldn't believe it, really, which was awesome, to be honest, because, yeah, there's a million stories like this up and down the F1 paddock where you see how hard people work. And and certainly a lot of people that don't actually have any input in the speed of a race car, you know, they're doing other jobs around it that help that team just function. And you're desperate for them to do well because, you know, they're good at their jobs, they're working so hard, but it's completely out of their hands. So when people talk about like biases or favorites and stuff, I find you never have it. You have this kind of desire in a weird way and it never can work, that you want to see everyone do well because so many people deserve it. So like when individually they get their chance, it's really cool to see, because that's what, four different teams now that have won this year, 4 out of 10.
And I was going to say, in the last 12 months, it's been, you add AlphaTauri into that as well, and Racing Point as well, yeah. Obviously now Aston Martin. That must have been frustrating for McLaren mechanics as well, is like all of your midfield rivals. You've had AlphaTauri win, you had Racing Point win, you've got Alpine win, and you must be there like we're quicker than these guys, you know, on most weekends that we come to, and we're not winning these races. But each of those had a great story as well. Like you feel good for the mechanics because Mercedes have won so many races, and you know, fair play to them, they've done an amazing job. But like their mechanic, like I'm sure that winning now probably doesn't mean the same that it used to when they first started. Just because when you win, you become used to winning. When you haven't won for that long, I imagine the feeling of doing it. And I can safely tell you that as an Ipswich Town fan, and we haven't won this year. When we do win, I'm gonna crack open a bottle of beer because I'm gonna be like, this is fantastic,
and drink it out of a shoe.
Probably just drink it out of a regular glass. I mean I live on my own, I could drink it out of whatever I want, no one will see, but probably a cup.
That's why
a regular cup. I'm trying to think what else I could drink it out. There's not many items that would kind of support a beer anyway. You alluded to something kind of minor that happened in the race. It was this little incident.
You mentioned it in your 60-second review as well.
Yeah, yeah. When Jevon actually locked up at turn one.
No, it was Max Pinn and Schumacher at four, I thought.
Yeah, that's right. Sorry, you're right.
Like, what a headache those two are.
They're crazy. Like, I can't imagine how difficult that is for them to manage. But that wasn't what I was talking about, but good aside. What could I have meant, guys?
Lewis and Max, boys.
Oh, yeah.
I know you're trying to be funny. I'll just cut to the chase.
This is why he's paid the big bucks. Look at that. That gets you on Channel 4. That sort of just direction, clarity.
Just crack on.
Get there. Hit the point.
Right. We haven't talked about this privately. So I'm genuinely interested to know what you guys both think. Racing incident, blame either side. Where do you stand?
I go marginally Max more to blame than Lewis, but I very much side with the use of the word predominantly in the stewards' decision, where it's not all his fault. Like, it's probably unrealistic to expect Lewis to leap out the way, but at the same time, there will have been a stage where Lewis could have done a bit more to avoid contact, even though he was in the right out of the two of them. So I think, it, in a sense, almost inevitable with what kind of is going to be such a tight fight. Like, that was Max's only chance to get ahead. Lewis knew it was like hugely important for him to stay ahead. They were kind of, was it a movable object and thingy force? Why can't I think of terms?
A thingy force means something object.
But yeah, like it was almost inevitable once they both headed for turn two and stuck at it. But as Lewis pointed out, he took the run off at turn four early in the race because he was like, well, we could have contact here that ruins both of them and you don't know how it's going to play out. And I will say one thing before I allow other opinions.
I mean, you've said many things already.
Yeah, but I'm going to throw one more in there. I do think Max is the one who needs to learn more out of these incidents than Lewis, because if you look at the two incidences, even if Max wasn't to blame, if he could have avoided them and did avoid them, then the worst case scenario, he would have 15 points more and a 20 point advantage over Lewis in the championship than he does right now. Like Cops being the main one, if he just yielded and ended up second, but you never know, he might even have got ahead of Lewis and won the race. Or flip side with this one, it could have been that if he yielded and then got Lewis later, or he yielded and just ended up behind Lewis, but there was two McLarens up the road, so Lewis wasn't getting full points. And yeah, I think it's actually, when it'll play out over a whole season, it's actually costing Max a bit more. Whereas for Lewis, even though he's the guy chasing and therefore not been able to take the points back this weekend or last weekend, I think as it overall has played out, it's probably better for him because Max has been so aggressive that it's ended up costing them both points and Max has lost out more.
Yeah, I agree. Lewis has been racing smarter. And that turn four incident, kind of, I know it was the first lap, it's a bit different, but it's like that. And it was the same in Imola, wasn't it, when Max forced him wide? It was go across the curbs, live to fight another day. And, you know, Lewis did get lucky in that race later on, but that's a separate incident. Like Lewis does seem to, and it's funny because 2010, if you look at Lewis in 2010 at Monza, I think it was at the Roger Chicane where he went on straight on this year. He clashed with Massa, I think it was, and he made a stupid move. One of the moves that cost him that year's championship. And I see a lot of the 2010 Lewis and the 2011 Lewis in the way Max fights. You know, he's very clearly very quick, clearly incredibly good. But sometimes you question his mindset. So I watched the highlights the other day. The radio messages from Max in the three laps leading up to that crash really are fascinating to me because he was irate. You know, he had the slow pit stop. He was telling the team, like, I've got nothing left of my tires, and his engineers just trying to calm him down. So I wonder in that moment, if he wasn't like that, would he have made a smarter decision? Easy for us to sit here and say that. We're just doing this in front of computers, and I respect that those guys have talent that I would never had in a million years. But it is interesting. I agree with Meadows. I hate the fact that an incident like that, though, and if you're predominantly to blame, I hate this idea that that should be a grid penalty. I feel like there was already a penalty. I know the outcome isn't important, but it is a bit frustrating. I know Lewis had a penalty as well, and the idea of penalties just gets a bit kind of tired after this point, especially when you have championship contenders fighting for a championship. I kind of like, to a degree, that they both wouldn't back down, but I agree that Lewis, in those moments, seems to be a bit smarter, because I think as well, he probably drove like that thinking Max was going over turn one. I think if he'd known Max was coming in, he would have given him that space, if you know what I mean. Like, obviously, Max turned right. You can see the moment where Lewis probably expects he's going to turn left and go over the curb, but he just doesn't. He stays straight in, and that's when he hits the curb, gets airborne, and then you can't do anything. So it's a very strange one. I think Johnny Herbert pointed out on Sky, he said, Max is the one who's never backing down from these things, and he needs to learn. So he said exactly what you said, and I really thought that was spot-on analysis. But again, if Max wants to win the title, he's got to learn to do that, hasn't he? So
I do wonder whether Lewis, having given Max space the majority of times this year pre-Silverstone, whether he's just decided that he's always the one who's given the space, and now he's just going to not give him so much space and then see what happens, and almost not teach Max a lesson, but kind of try to explain to Max that he can't always just expect to be essentially let through or bully his way through. But I think, like, I agree with both of you guys. So I know that's probably very boring for the listeners.
That we'll just disagree on one of us. Just say Max was completely not to blame. But go for it.
I think it's just that it's just experience, though, right? So there's 10 years or so between them, probably more. And Max is going to learn or grow into this, and he's going to start making smarter decisions. And I said at the time, at the Silverstone incident, exactly what you said, mate. If he'd just given him space, and or Meda said it as well.
And in that instance, sorry, lads, but like Leclerc later in the race gave Lewis that space in the same corner. So there's two instances in both those races where it's like you could have given a space. And I know that that's frustrating for a driver to hear, but you could have done it. So, but, sorry, go on with what
and
you said.
But wasn't it Senna who said something like, if you don't go for a gap, you're not a racing driver anymore. And I do appreciate that mindset. And I do think that
was there a gap there at that point? I don't know if there was really.
There was
Senna's line with Prost. Yeah.
Senna, who spent a lot of his career crashing with people, which people forget with that quote. They're like, Senna's idea of what a gap was slightly strange, as good as he was.
So I'm interested to see whether now there's been two clashes where Max hasn't come off very well. So I'd be interested to see whether he will change his mind set on it. I don't know how you get over that red mist though in the short term. So, you know, like you said, like the slow pit stop, they both had slow. It's amazing how this worked out, right? They both had slow pit stops of varying lengths. And that just transpired that they were side by side. Like it couldn't have been any more perfect, could it?
You know? I think if you got like somebody involved to like look at all the events that led up to that and the fact that Lewis and Max emerged at that moment, like wheel to wheel, I think it's incredible. Like there's almost like a preordained kind of like, it's like this was meant to, I don't like, usually I'm not like someone who believes in fate, but in the context of this championship, it's like that's crazy that they ended up there because they had no right to be, I think Horner said it, they had no right to be fighting together on track at that point. So yeah, that's nuts. Just quickly on that as well, do you guys think, I think Lewis has got nothing to lose. He's got 7 championships, like his legacy is secure. Max is going for this first one. Mm-hmm. And I think that mentally must play into it. There must be a sense of urgency, especially you don't know what next year looks like. This could be Max's best chance to win a championship for a long time. Mm-hmm. That's got to be in his head. Whereas Lewis is clearly, I'm not saying Lewis doesn't want to win an 8th championship, but he knows he's got championships. This isn't like, this is be all and end all for me. If I don't win this, my career's ruined type thing. And he's just got that experience. He kind of maybe has some context. He obviously does so much away from F1 that I think maybe he doesn't think about racing the same that he did before. He still loves it, but it's not like it used to be when he was young. But for Max, it's everything. This championship means everything to him. So maybe that is going against him in these moments. I don't know.
I think that's a fair point in the sense of when we then say about the way Lewis handles it, and the way Max is handling it. And yeah, they're in different situations. They're under different pressures. And maybe, yeah, you could then say that Lewis has the luxury that he can handle it differently because, okay, A, he has experience on his side, but B, like say, he's got 7 in the bank already and he probably can afford to play the long game to see if this is the right way to win an 8th. He might then get to the end of the year and look back and go, you know what, if I'd have been more sensible with Max, perhaps, you know, at Monza, I'm guessing, because all the others... Well, no, I suppose with a lot of the others, actually, he jumped out the way a bit more and then went on to not beat Max in those races. So he might have thought, well, if I'd have been more firm there and Max didn't take 7 points off me and we were both out the race, maybe he wins a title that way. So it could, you know, it's not that Lewis is doing it right and Max is doing it wrong. It's just that in the balance of the way things have played so far, you kind of see that maybe Max could do with a little bit more patience at certain times. And I think with that turn one move, he came from a long way back. Like that was a pretty audacious, like there's a good screenshot, I think, with how late he has to brake, like how far behind Lewis's car he was, really close to the apex at turn one. For him to carry the speed running outside was a damn good effort, but was really optimistic. And I think at the last second, Lewis kind of goes, oh, damn, he's there. But, you know, he kind of had shown him that he shouldn't be trying to be there. And they ended up in the same spot. But I thought it was really interesting hearing Alonso's take on it, who said, you know, we joked about Giovinazzi locking up at turn one and that sort of thing. But he said there were like 5 or 6 incidents that were very similar of drivers going side by side through those two corners and making contact, but that they weren't quite over the curb like Max was. And when they made contact, it wasn't wheel to wheel. So with Max, with a bit of air from the curb and then wheels hitting Lewis's wheels, it launched him over the top of the Merc and they're both out of the race. But he said there was ones that hit, you know, hit the floor or hit the front wing or whatever, and just made much lighter contact that meant they both got through and one's a bit unhappy and the stewards noted it and looked at it. And on the whole, I think didn't take any action anywhere, but they were able just to come through even though they had a very, very similar incident. And he said it was unlucky for both Max and Lewis that theirs actually played out the way it did and that they both kind of did the right thing. Max was having to be aggressive to try and make that move. Lewis was having to show him that he wasn't going to yield, but he didn't know how it was going to play out as a final like act, but that it shouldn't have been quite so dramatic an outcome, really. So I think there's also that. It's just because it's the two of them, we're going to focus on it so much. And what I'm quite glad is that even the way we've just done this, the most important thing from that race, really, halo aside and Lewis's safety, because that was a bit scary, was that McLaren took a 1-2 in a race they fully deserved to win and shouldn't be overshadowed by what happened between Lewis and Max.
Agreed.
Yeah, 100%.
And what a way to finish this podcast with some proper F1 chat, hey?
Yeah.
There you go. For anyone who listened to the first 15 minutes, right, these guys are going to talk F1. We got it. We got it in.
So that's just a lesson to try and like stick with us. Listen to the chit chat. It's kind of like pub chat anyway, isn't it? You go to a pub, you chat about nonsense, you eventually get into quite a healthy debate.
Yeah.
And then
after a few beers, that debate really breaks down and turns into just a shouting match at each other where you're both arguing the same point. You don't realize it. So you're just going back and forth and be like, yeah, but you don't see this. And actually, you're both saying the same thing. At least that's what I do. Nate knows.
Yeah, we've had a lot of debates like that. Me, you, and Lawrence Edmondson. Barreto's usually just sat in the corner just being happy. Never gets involved in those things.
That's why I'm calling it here before it descends into anarchy.
That's a good shout.
He's just trying to make sure the beer doesn't froth in his shoe.
Yeah. Priority. That's another lesson I need to improve on during this bit of time off. All right, chaps, it's been a pleasure. Thanks again for your time. And thanks to everyone who is listening as well. Please remember to hit the subscribe button and follow us on our social channels. You can read Nate's work on ESPN.com, Mediz's work on Racer.com, and my work on F1.com. We'll do this again very, very soon.
Ciao.
Arrivederci.